His Eminence, our Imperious Leader.
And welcome back to another exciting episode of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly, call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And this is Tuesday night live in LVRocks.com. Consoler is the producer, the Centurion in waiting, my Centurion guards here at the studio, you know. Anyway, come get me. I have my Centurions guarding me. And let's see, the website for the program is subject2discussion.com. Email. There's a Centurion. I should call him Cy or something like that, huh? And the subject2discussion.com. And email subject2discussion@lvrocks.com. And tonight, actually, I want to welcome antiradio.net. I got my first affiliate. Yeah, no, they're just plugging the podcast version of the program. So, and I thank them for including my program. It's called antiradio.net. They have a lot of it's like a winch program that will make supposedly it says it makes Howard Stern blush. I don't know. And but anyway, they're revolutionary programs trying to take back radio from the corporate radio monopoly that's going on right now. And don't we know that sitting right here in Las Vegas? Absolutely, all these radio stations are owned by the corporations. And the radio stations are going down the drain because everybody's going to satellite or to internet radio or the podcasting. So anyway, and this evening, after the news to me and the news to you, would be Chip from PoliticalSports.com. And then in the second hour will be our pop culture discussion with Josh Hathaway from blogcritics.org. And in the final half hour, Aaron Douglas, who plays Tyrell from Battlestar Galactica, he informed me he will be on the program. I emailed him this morning, and he did reconfirm that he will be on the program. So we look forward to hearing from him. And I also want to thank sciencefictionbuzz.com for plugging the program this evening. And last week was the second most highest podcasted program outside of the Katie Sackhoff. I got to get somebody bigger than her on because I want to, you know, everybody would get close to beating her numbers, but not too close. So we need some huge star. Who can I get? I don't know. Muffet can come back, or I might get Edward James Olmos on. So I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, and I'm going to get to the news to me before we get to the news to you. And, of course, today, actually, I was seeing this story here on Yahoo News, which is kind of amazing. And nobody's watching these damn Olympics because I guess the ratings are going down the drain. But we're in here about the Olympics. The Austrian team, so he's been doping and everything else. And where's this? Here we go. Florida man kills roommate over toilet paper. Now, I should probably just save this, but I couldn't believe it. It's Moss Bluff, Florida. A man accused of fatally beating his roommate with a sledgehammer and a claw hammer because there was no toilet paper in their home has been arrested. I don't know. I guess he wanted some Charmin, and there was no Charmin. Maybe, oh, hell, use the phone book. You know. But anyway, and the news to me, of course, we had the legendary Kurt Gowdy passed away, legendary sportscaster. He's died at 86. He did that American Outdoor Doorsman, or whatever it's called, on ABC. I used to watch that program when I was a kid because he had the celebrities on. They go fishing or hunting or whatever it was, but I thought that was a pretty good program. So, you know, he was one of the original broadcasters for the Olympics, so it's too bad. And, of course, USA Today has got the story about the drives to ban gay adoption heat up. I mean, a lot of these kids are all sitting in the orphanages and everything else. They won't let the gays adopt them and give them a real home. I mean, for crying out loud. And also, Cops in the Eye of the Storm, about these cops in New Orleans who abandoned their posts to be with their families during the storm. It's in the USA Today. And so far, Mother Nature's bill says here, Katrina, minimum damage estimates from the USA's most expensive weather disasters last year. Hurricane Katrina has $100 billion so far. Next one closest, it's Hurricane Wilma at $10 billion. So, and also I have a story about oversized homes wearing out their welcome at these huge super mansions. The communities are revolting against these super mansions, so they're starting to fight back and limit the size of these homes and these lots. So that's good to know. And news to me, of course, we had we mentioned Kurt Gowdy. Anderson Cooper ran a story on Monday about that horrible these horrible dog kennels selling dogs to research facilities and veterinarian schools, and he had undercover footage. They showed the footage of this one guy was yanking on this dog with the leash, and this dog was revolting, so he turned around and belted the damn dog in the face with his fist. So that was disgusting. And also this handler, undercover reporter, was he was what they called a hoser. So he's not from Canada, but no, he'd go in there with in the mornings with a high-powered hose and spray the cages of the crap and all that on the floor. Well, anyway, they didn't get the dogs. I waited to let the dogs stay in the kennel because they're going to kill them anyway because they're research animals. So he did. He sprayed the cages and the crap and the piss got all over sprayed all over the dogs again. So I know that was disgusting. And then he found this mass grave of dogs that. They would in this table out in the middle, out by this mass grave, was covered with dry blood, and apparently they would dogs that had heartworm, they'd kill the dog, open up the chest, take out the heart, and pull the heartworm out, and then save the heart, and then throw the dog's body into this mass grave. So I thought that was it was a horrendous story, and they showed this one dog how the dogs get this. They get the cage itis, I guess, is their cage crazy, and they come in and find the dogs cannibalizing each other. You come in the morning and see these dogs gnawing on the carcass of a dog that was killed over the night. So, and then Jay Leno, Chris, yesterday was President's Day. On the Tonight Show Monday, Jay Leno said that in honor of President's Day, there was a 21-gun salute, but Dick Cheney fired back. I thought that was pretty funny. And more uproar over the Bush administration's deal to let the UAE, a state-run company, DP, to manage some of our large ports. That's blowing up all over the place. It was all over the news today, and O'Reilly's talking about it when I was pulling in. And Bush said, according to Jay Leno, don't worry about the edit company because we'll be wiretapping their calls anyway. So and rest assured, but they did outbid Al Qaeda to run those ports. So, and another tape from UPL serviced on Monday. So like I said before, it's like a tape of the month club with him. I mean, he shows up tape. I understand. Why can't we have a CIA agent? And we're so good at the spying business now. Why can't we, put a CIA agent, camped out in front of Al Jazeera and, follow these people? I don't know. And what else? If we can find American Idol, we can find UBL. You know what I'm saying? And Sunday we had the Defense Department says 10 of the 12 U.S. troops involved in the crash up the Hornet of Africa had died. And then on CNN late edition, Jane Harman, Congresswoman of California, said that Bush violated the National Security Act of 1947. Was I around then? Barely, no. By not briefing Congress completely and fully in regards to the wiretapping scandal. And then Saturday we had the rioting in Indonesia over the cartoons satirizing Muhammad. Now groups are saying that it's the United States is responsible for the cartoons as a way to trigger violence in the Islamic world. Like I say, we got to trot out Muhammad Ali, put the guy out there, have him have a statement, then they'll calm down. They love him over there. And then Friday we had the new Olympic sport called border cross. I thought that was interesting. If any country can win a gold in border cross, it's Mexico. You know what I'm saying? And Thursday, we had the late Thursday, Friday morning, the mudslides in the Philippines with 1,800 missing, most of them are presumed dead. And then Wednesday, more Abu Ghraib picks showed up. And Dick Shooter Cheney, we had Scooter Libby, now we have Shooter Cheney, spoke with Berhume at Fox and took full responsibility for the shooting. No kidding, because you shot the guy, you should take responsibility. And Condoleezza Rice took some heat from Barbara Boxer and others. She asked for $100 million for programs in Iran, and that she said are not for regime change, but for education exchange and Farsi language radio and other small items. So now that we move on to news to you, and there you go. I did a story I see reading on Yahoo News about the three charged and planning to attack troops, three Muslim men in Ohio from the Mideast. Have been charged with plotting terrorist attacks against the U.S. and coalition troops in Iraq and other countries. So that's big news right now. And then we had this from Tuesday from today. War costs irk Congress. This is from the Christian Science Monitor, no less. More than 4 years into the war on terror, Congress is chafing. They better use some cream on that or something. But not yet balking at a tab nearing $500 billion. President Bush's latest emergency spending request sent to Capitol Hill last week includes $72.4 billion for the global war on terror. He also asked for another $19.8 billion for hurricane relief at home. But unlike the previous five defense supplemental bills, number six comes at the start of what lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are calling a make-or-break year for U.S. engagement in Iraq. No kidding. Let's see what else. The fiscal year 2000, how come, yeah, the congressmen are asking, how come this Iraq supplemental isn't included with the defense budget? Well, Rumsfeld said, of course, he makes a whole lot of sense. He goes, we could do it either way. Why aren't you not? How come you're not doing it then? By doing it in the supplemental, frankly, which I personally prefer, we can have much better information for you because it's prepared at a later date. Well, excuse me, didn't he just present the budget like a month ago? How the hell much longer can that be? You know what I mean? You know what that's all about? They don't want to include this into that into the budget and make the budget even more out of whack with the deficit and the defense budget be so much higher than everything else in the budget. So that's what that's all about. And then in his fiscal year, but he does, see, now he's asking for $72.4 billion, but he forgets that in the actually in the budget, he includes an additional $50 billion as a bridge fund for war costs after October 1st. So you got $50 billion plus the 72, so that's, what is it, $122 billion right there for the war for this year. So, and this is also from today. Bush blames cuts at Energy Lab on mix-up. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. President Bush on Tuesday acknowledged that Washington has sent mixed signals to one of the nation's premier labs studying renewable energies by first laying off, then reinstating 32 workers just before his visit. The president blamed a conflicting message on an appropriations mix-up in funding the Energy Department's National Renewable Energy Laboratory, which is developing the very renewable energy technologies the president is promoting. 2 weeks ago, 32 workers, including 8 researchers, were laid off the job. Then over the weekend, miraculously, just before Bush's visit, they found the money to put back in, $5 million to put back into the organization's budget, and they were able to hire them back. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. So, unbelievable. Renewable energy, my ass. He's not going to find renewable energy. You know, pump that oil, you know. Who cares? Feds step up concealment of public documents. This is from Monday. U.S. intelligence agencies have been secretly removing from public access at the National Archives thousands of historical documents that were available for years, the New York Times reported on Monday. The restoration of classified status to more than 55,000 previously declassified pages began in 1989. I wonder if that includes the Constitution, maybe, or the Declaration of Independence. Maybe both of them are now classified. We can't read it anymore. They'll make it up. The secret program accelerated after Bush took office, and especially after the 9/11 attacks, according to archives records, the paper said. So, what in the world is going on? Why can't we read these things anymore? This next one's awesome from today. U.S. Church Alliance denounces Iraq war. A coalition of American churches sharply denounced the U.S.-led war in Iraq on Saturday, accusing Washington of raining down terror and apologizing to other nations for the violence, degradation, and poverty our nation has sown. The statement issued at the largest gathering of Christian churches in nearly a decade also warned the United States was pushing the world toward environmental catastrophe with a culture of consumption and its refusal to back international accords seeking to battle global warming. The World Council of Churches includes more than 350 mainstream Protestant, Anglican, and Orthodox churches. Of course, the Roman Catholic Church is not a member. The U.S. groups, yada, 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 yada. So now even the churches get involved in this Stop the War business. And this next one is also from yesterday, from Monday. Insurgency-related violence cost the country's vital oil industry about $6.25 billion in damage and lost revenue last year. That's what I'm saying. Why are troops still in the middle of Iraq and Baghdad? They say, pull them out to the border, you know, let us guard the border and guard those oil fields and make sure the money's coming in, and then give the citizens of Iraq dividends on the money like we do with Alaska. Give them some of the money from that. Give them a stake and keep making sure those oil fields aren't damaged. The oil industry suffered $6.25 billion in losses in 2005 due to infrastructure sabotage and lost export revenues. The oil ministry spokesman Assam Jihad said, "I don't think you should have somebody speaking for your oil industry with the name of last name of Jihad, but oh well." Jihad told Dow Jones Newswires that Iraqi oil installations were hit by 186 attacks last year, in which insurgents killed 47 oil engineers, technicians, and workers, as well as about 100 police protecting pipelines and other oil-related facilities. That's why I need the troops there, the tanks. Most of the sabotage took place in the northern installations, preventing Iraq from exporting about 400,000 barrels a day that normally pass through the pipelines to the Turkish port of Ceyhan, wherever it is, someplace in Turkey. Iraq currently produces more than 2 million barrels per day from its southern and northern oil fields. down about 800,000 barrels from levels before the U.S. 2003 U.S.-led invasion. So, interesting. Interesting. As I said, pull those troops out, put them on the borders, and also guard those oil fields, let the Iraqi police take care of that civil war that's going on in that country. So, this is from Sunday, from Chicago, from WFLD, which is Field Broadcasting. It used to be Field, the Marshall Field family. Field Museum, Field Science and Industry, they pretty much owned that city at one time. Police dog sniffs out alleged murderer. DNA found on bandana in alley. A Chicago police dog sniffs out evidence linked to an alleged killer. On January 30th, three people died. Another was seriously injured in a shooting at a Westside garage. One guy, 23, is charged with three counts of murder and one count of attempted murder. Investigators used DNA evidence found in a bandana near the crime scene to link the guy to the murders. The bandana was discovered by 8-year-old Denny, a German Shepherd police dog. Denny picked up on the scent and led his handler to the key piece of evidence. Amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. Police say this is the first time a police dog has found evidence used for DNA testing that ended up solving a crime. That's amazing. There you go. Oh, what happened? Did you shoot the dog? Oh, poor Denny. He's a good German Shepherd. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, there he is. Oh, take him to Denny's now. Give him some bacon from Denny's. Uh-oh. It's a little one. Give him a little poodle to play with for a while, you know? The police dogs need to work off some tension with the nice, attractive female poodle dog. Department of Defense staffers notes from 9/11 from the... This is from Outraged Moderates. On July 23rd, 2005, the Outraged Moderates submitted a electronic Freedom of Information Act to request the Department of Defense seeking DOD staffer Stephen Cambone's notes from meetings with the Rumsfeld on the afternoon of September 11th. Cambone's notes were cited heavily in the 9/11 Commission report's reconstruction of the day's events. On February 10, 2006, he received response from the DOD, which includes partially copied notes from Cambone. The release notes document Donald Rumsfeld's 240 instructions to General Myers to find the best info fast. Judge whether good enough to hit SH Saddam Hussein at the same time, not only UBL. So Rumsfeld, on that same day we were hit, was also looking for evidence to go after Saddam Hussein, not just Osama bin Laden. So that was very enlightening. This is from Sunday. A man allegedly bites off girlfriend's nose. A family sitting down to dinner had to call police and an ambulance after a man allegedly bit off the nose of his girlfriend.
Holy cow!
There you go. Oh, he put some salt on her, dipped it in some salsa or spaghetti sauce. Jody Bennett came out of a back room of a North Tulsa residence on Thursday with a napkin over her face. Instead, her boyfriend, identified as Greg Hill, had bitten her nose. Medics responded to the house, saw that Bennett's nose had been severed, and called the police.
Son of a bitch!
Hey, well, the food was horrible, but the nose tasted good. You know what I'm saying? Put a little salt on it, tastes like chicken. We looked around and tried to find a nose.
What in the name of corn on the cob is going on around here?
The police said they tried to find the nose. They got to bring Denny down from Chicago. If he could find that bandana in an alley, he could find that damn nose. We looked around and tried to find a nose, but couldn't find it, a police spokesman said. I think he swallowed it. The ambulance took Bennett to a local hospital where police talked to emergency room personnel about pumping Hill's stomach to see if the nose was inside. Ugh. They said given the acid in the stomach, that would be a futile effort to try and do that. The nose is made up primarily of cartilage and other soft tissues that stomach acid can dissolve quickly. Hmm. Yum. Yeah, that'd be good. I wonder what it looks like if it comes out when he takes a crap, if it'll come out that way. I don't know. This one's from Monday from a Scripps Howard writer named Bonnie Irby. She writes, impeach George W. Bush. Those blasphemous liberal media outlets have once again deprived the American public of widespread coverage of nothing less than startling poll results. The nonpartisan polling firm Zogby International last month found that a margin of 52% to 43% Americans want Congress to consider impeaching President Bush if he wiretapped American citizens without a judge's approval. Well, there's no if about it anymore. The president approved warrantless wiretaps in 2002. Two years later, during a campaign appearance in Buffalo, New York, he volunteered he had done nothing of the kind. That's called breaking the law and lying about it. So, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I like as much as I like to see him get his.
I have to deny your request.
There you go. The Republicans running the Congress, I mean, he is going to go down in the records as probably the worst president we've ever had. I mean, the deficits are going through the roof. This war, this brainless, mindless, planless war, it's ridiculous. This one's from Saturday. The court says a rapist can seek reduced sentence. Italy's highest court ruled Friday that a man who raped the 14-year-old daughter of his girlfriend can seek to have his sentence reduced because the girl was sexually active. The ruling provoked an outcry across Italy, no kidding, was condemned by UNICEF and prompted other justices on the court to issue a statement saying the ruling was wrong.
What the shit is that?
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. So this guy, Marco T, sexual violence and threats against a 14-year-old daughter of his living girlfriend, and requested reduced sentence saying the crime was less serious because the girl had already had several...
You sick son of a bitch!
Yeah.
You just made your twisted bastard
wow.
Right here I died! You son of a bitch!
Wow, because the girl had already had several sexual partners at 14 years old. Wow. His request was rejected. So, Bailey's High Court said the judges should reevaluate decision because the girl, since the age of 13, had had many sexual relations with men of every age. Oh my God!
Holy
tramp.
Cow!
Oh boy! And this next one, it goes right in with this next one. Mom accused of allowing man to have sex with her 15-year-old daughter.
Holy cow!
Unbelievable! Where are these people?
Holy cow!
Where are these people for me?
You
know what I'm saying?
Bitch.
A Racine County woman is accused of giving a man permission to have sex with her 15-year-old daughter. The mother was charged with... There you go. The mother was charged with failing to prevent mental harm to a child. The man, Aaron Corkle of Tucson, Arizona, was charged with second-degree sexual assault of a child. According to a criminal complaint, Corkle met the girl and her mother last year, and he came to Wisconsin earlier this month and asked the girl's mother for permission to have sex with her daughter. Unbelievable. The complaint says the mother told him that they could have sex as long as long as he wore a condom. Oh, okay. You can have sex with my 15-year-old
you
daughter.
Are a meathead.
There you go. But make sure you wear a condom. Oh, okay. Thanks. Yeah. Oh my God. Horrible. And there's another one here. It ties into it. It's like one, two, three. Teen charged with fondling hospital patient. Now, how'd you like to be sitting in the hospital and then some, you know, unless it's a blonde 20-year-old, she could fondle me. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying? This is from Anderson, Indiana. Authorities say a teenager fondled a female patient before breaking into locked offices at Anderson Hospital.
Laughable, man.
Yeah. 18-year-old Derek Hutchinson was arrested, Saturday morning in an office at St. John's Medical Center. A hospital spokesman says Hutchinson was a visitor of an emergency room patient. Where happened to the person he went to see in an emergency room? But he went into the main part of the hospital. A patient on the third floor said she was awakened by a man matching Hutchinson's description, who then fondled her. Hutchinson was found in the hospital's basement carrying a tub filled with several items. Weirdo. Bozo.
Holy God, dude.
Yeah. That area in Indiana is all but corn, so, you know, they do grow more corn in Indiana. They grow lunatics there in Indiana, too. This one is also from Sunday. The Nonpartisan Independent Congressional Research Service has issued a report which analyzes the legality of the NSA surveillance program. Here is the last paragraph of the conclusion of the report. From the foregoing analysis, it appears unlikely that a court would hold that Congress has expressly or implied authorized the NSA electronic surveillance operations here under discussion. And it would likewise appear that to the extent that, oh my God, those surveillances fall within the definition of electronic surveillance within the meaning of FISA, or any activity regulated under Title III, Congress intended to cover the entire field with these statutes to the extent that the NSA activity is not permitted by the reading of Title III or FISA, it may represent an exercise of presidential power at its lowest ebb, in which case exclusive presidential control is sustainable only by disabling Congress from acting upon the subject. Whatever, I lost. I my eyes glazed over after the first sentence, but they're piling on. I mean, this thing's going to roll around through this whole year. You know? And if the Democrats get a hold of one of the houses of Congress, watch out. Here come the hearings. This is from Saturday. Scholars rate the worst presidential blunders. Number one was James Buchanan for failing to avert the Civil War. Number two is Andrew Johnson's decision just after the Civil War to side with Southern whites and oppose improvements in justice for Southern blacks beyond abolishing slavery. Number three is Lyndon Johnson for allowing the Vietnam War to intensify. Number four was Woodrow Wilson's refusal to compromise on the Treaty of Versailles after World War I. Five was Richard Nixon's involvement in the Watergate cover-up. Six was James Madison's failure to keep the United States out of war of 1812 with Britain. Seven was Thomas Jefferson's Embargo Act of 1807. He self-imposed prohibition on trade with Europe during the Napoleonic Wars. Eight was JFK allowing the Bay of Pigs invasion that led to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nine was Reagan and the Iran-Contra affair. And 10 was Bill Clinton's Monica Lewinsky scandal. So, see, that's not as a big deal as we thought it was when it happened, you know, so much for that blue dress. And also we have the director of at XM Radio resigns at cost skyrocket. XM Satellite Radio posted a wider-than-expected loss last week as a result of extra time spending to lure subscribers and disclose that a director had resigned in a dispute over corporate strategy. So they're having some little struggles right there, you know. And I think I read somewhere Sirius is also having some struggles as well. I don't know what happened to that one. I thought I got that one as well. Maybe not. So, and then also we have this from Saturday, but the Gettysburg battling vandals, the war military park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Monuments honoring Civil War soldiers from Massachusetts, New York, and Pennsylvania have been vandalized. A sculpture's head was stolen from a part of the battlefield called Devil's Den. A sword from a second memorial was stolen, and a third sculpture was toppled into a decorative fence. The Gettysburg National War is 6,000 acres and holds 1,300 Civil War monuments. So these people got nothing else better to do than to, knock over these monuments at Gettysburg. What in the world is going on? Yeah. And then we have the next one. It's going to make everybody sick to their stomach. This is from Zimbabwe. Bodies of fetuses and newborns clog Harare sewers. Zimbabwe's shortages, inflation blamed for rise in illegal abortions. Why the hell are those babies getting down into the sewers? You know what I'm saying? The corpses of at least 20 newborn babies and fetuses are found each week in the sewers of Zimbabwe's capital, having been flushed down toilets. How the hell do you flush a baby and feed it down the toilet? I don't know. Unless those drains are really deep. I don't know. Then maybe just sort of flush them down the toilets. A town clerk says the baby's remains were found among a wide variety of waste and garbage cleared by city council workers unblocking sewers and drains in Harare. Apart from upsetting the normal flow of waste is not right, no kidding. From a moral standpoint, some of the things that are happening now are shocking. Acute shortages of revenue and gasoline and the nation's worst economic crisis since independence in 1980 have crippled public utilities and garbage collection services across Zimbabwe. Workers removed at least 20 tons of sand from sewers every day. Inflation is running at 613%. Wow, that's ridiculous. So how are these babies getting? They're flushing the babies down the toilet. That's ridiculous. I don't know. And the fetuses and the newborn babies, and they find them in a week, every week. 20 newborn babies and fetuses are found every week in the sewers of Zimbabwe. Horrible, horrible. This next one is from a. From Denver, Colorado, elderly couple held up by 12 or 13-year-old boy. Ruby Hill residents say boy pulled out gun, demanded money. An elderly couple was shaken up after a boy knocked on their door, pulled out a gun, and demanded their money Friday morning. The couple said that they gave the boy what he wanted and he took off. The victims believe the gunman is possibly only 12 or 13 years old, and they are troubled that someone so young could resort to this. I'm scared to open the door now. Oh, yeah, that's not just in Denver, I'm telling you. The victims say the boy was Hispanic and a thin build and wearing a black sweatshirt with orange on the hood.
Holy cow!
So, and then we also, then of course, Saturday we had the story about the Libyans burning Italy at the Italian consulate in Tripoli in Libya, and they still these damn cartoons. Police kill up to 11 demonstrators.
Can we get rid of all the Mexicans?
There you go. And they kill up to 11 demonstrators as violence spreads to another country. So this is going on and on and on. And also we had the Bush administration on Saturday derailing the investigation. The Bush administration helped derail a Senate bid to investigate a warrantless eavesdropper program on Friday after signaling it would reject Congress's request to have former Attorney General John D. Ashcroft and other officials testify about the program's legality. So See, he's going to fight this all. We're not going to have any hearings. I mean, this thing's going to go on. And I say this thing is going. The same thing with Shooter Cheney. You know, this took everybody's mind off of these things with the port business and the eavesdropping and the wiretapping. Now, you know, something else will come up to distract us. It's UPL and these guys in Ohio and all this stuff. So we got to keep our eyes on the prize here. You know, keep them honest on this thing. So, and I think we're set for Chip from Political Sports. There we go. And we are joined by Chip from PoliticalSports.com and also a blog critic. Chip, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Sean. How are you tonight?
Welcome back to another thrill-packed edition of Subject to Discussion.
Man, I tell you, we've had a busy week.
Absolutely. I thought it'd be kind of dull this week because of you know, President's holiday and with everybody obsessed over Shooter Cheney's you know, incident and all that, but It's been crazy.
Yeah, man, there's been a lot of stuff that's going on. You know, from the fallout after the shooting with Cheney, it seems to have died down with everything else that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we think of this whole port business. I mean, they're really, and Bush said today he is, you know, he's sticking by. He's not going to reject this deal. He's going to go down to the mat with this one, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty, I think it's actually pretty interesting. You know, my first reaction was, you have got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God forbid that, you know, knowing nothing about the company, how it's run or anything else, I thought, you know, if by some chance there was a terrorist attack in one of these ports, New York or Baltimore or, you know, wherever they were supposed to be managing, talk about the shit hitting the fan before. It'd be just unbelievable from a political standpoint for the administration to say that they gave over management of these ports to an Arab state-run company. It'd just be an absolute disaster.
Absolutely. I mean, and there was something I was reading before I left my house to come here that the this company supposedly has some ties to somebody in the Bush administration. Nominate somebody for some post, and apparently he was a former executive or something to do with this company in the UAE, right?
Yes. As you look into this, things get even more interesting, mm-hmm. and not necessarily in a negative way, which I find intriguing. One is that this company supposedly is a very solid company. With the acquisition of the British P&O shipping company, it becomes the third largest shipping company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It manages ports all over the world, and with this acquisition will manage ports in Buenos Aires, Vancouver, Indonesia, a number of different places. And the port that it manages in Dubai is considered one of the best run ports in the world. Dubai also was one of the first countries to work with the United States in putting United States custom agents in the ports to look at security or, you know, analyze security arrangements prior to anything being shipped into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you think, well, you know, maybe it's not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also read that it turns out that it's not unusual for foreign companies to actually manage or have the contracts to manage ports in the United States.
That's true, because the UK.
As a matter of fact, in Los Angeles, which is the largest port in the country, foreign companies manage 80% mm-hmm. of that port. So it definitely makes you sort of scratch your head and say, well, you know, maybe this isn't so bad. But from a political standpoint, you look at it, an Arab country that managing the port of New York is like, it's
a slap in the face. All those survivors of 9/11 and everything. Here you are giving it over to this is a state-run company of the United Arab Emirates. And then that was the only country that acknowledged I believe it was the Taliban as the government of Afghanistan. They're the only ones, you know, in the world that acknowledged them. And then here we are handing over the Port of New York over to them. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's well, I don't know if you watch the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, but he had James Carville on yesterday, and he said that Carville's saying this story is like a political pinata for both parties. Democrats are hitting it, and so are the Republicans are hitting it. You know?
Yeah. It without a doubt. You know, mm-hmm. and both parties, any Republican who wants to distance himself from the Bush administration prior to the election can mm-hmm. use it with very great results. You know, standing up against the president, trying to be tough on security, and the Bush administration looks bad no matter what they do at this point. You know, yeah. they back down, or if they stay with this. Even if it is a very legitimate, solid, well-run company, they're in a bad situation from a political standpoint. So they're, at this point, seem to be in a lose-lose situation. They can't get out of this no matter what.
Well, and it goes back to this whole secrecy issue with this administration. This deal was made sometime last year, and now it's just starting to trickle out now. You know, this is going down. Yeah, you know,
yep.
I mean, Chertoff was somewhere in, I think, late edition, and he was saying, we went through all these safe. I mean, with the way that, you know, he's handled the New Orleans mess, how can anybody believe a word a man says? I mean, he's botched the New Orleans business. Who's going to believe that they, thoroughly, investigated this company? I mean, come on. Yeah, I say follow the money.
I don't know if you check out my website this week, but mm-hmm. Michael Chertoff was the winner of our fabulous Fumble of the Week award
yes.
for that very reason.
Yes.
I mean, he did such a great job in New Orleans, and here he is back managing or overseeing this sort of thing, and it's just, you just can't believe it. you can't make this up.
No. I mean, they say, he fired Bush, fired Brownie, for being incompetent, yet he's letting Chertoff stay on the line, and Chertoff's turned out to be more of a blunderer than Brownie is,
Well, yeah, I'm actually, some of the things that Brownie said this last week in the hearings were quite forceful and very effective. You know, how he laid out all these emails that he sent and phone call records and all that of calling Washington and trying to get in touch with these guys and giving them the heads up about all of this, and they basically ignored him. And that's not to say that he didn't make substantial mistakes, but he wasn't as bad as everybody's made him out to be.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about this report because we want to talk about Paul Hackett. We briefly mentioned him a couple weeks ago. Those of you who don't know who Paul Hackett is, he's an Iraqi war veteran, and he was running for U.S. Senate in Ohio. And I thought he was on Hardball a few times, and he spouted off about some crazy things, especially about Bush and alleged drug abuse, and I didn't like the way he spouted off about that stuff. But I mean, I think the Democrats needed someone like that as a credible critic on this war. Yeah, and then apparently the party higher ups, Reid and Schumer, got to him, and they're pushing somebody out with Sherrod.
Sherrod Brown,
and who is white, by the way. Rush Limbaugh keeps saying he's black. It's racist. No, he's a white guy. And then because he's been in Congress for a while. So anyway, they basically ignored Hackett and basically forcing Hackett to drop out because Sherrod Brown has raised like $2.3 million for the Senate race, and whereas Paul Hackett from Ohio has only raised like $230,000. So pretty much he had to drop out. He had no money.
Well, yeah, he was ahead 10-1 in fundraising. And Sherrod Brown was a seven-term congressman from that area. And, I thought originally that Hackett had announced before Brown did for the Senate, but that was actually not the case.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it turns out that Brown announced like 2 days before Hackett did, which was kind of interesting. And this goes back, I touched on it, and you and I talked about it last week, and this goes back also to the Pirro thing in New York of trying to work with the party in order to gain a political position. And I think that in the end, the Republicans, both inside Ohio and out, looked at Brown as being a more legitimate candidate because of his experience. They also were a little bit put off, I think, by Hackett and his outspoken criticism being at certain times inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And their thinking was that in a highly visible race, being for the Senate as opposed to Congress, that they wanted somebody that they felt would be a bit more politically adept. Mm. Not necessarily a better candidate, but would be just better all around. And they thought that, that Hackett, in the political vernacular, was a little bit too raw, and that he needed a little more seasoning, and that he had a great future. So that they were trying to then push him to take to go for a congressional seat rather than for the Senate. Hmm. There was also a feeling that Brown had kind of paid his dues, and he, you know, had been waiting and waiting and waiting for an opportunity, and here it was, and he was going to take it, and that he had worked with all these people over a long period of time. Hmm. Hackett, obviously, being an Iraqi war veteran and got a lot of press and got a lot of interest on the blogs, was getting a lot of publicity. But I think that they thought, or at least the Democrats thought, that in the long run that Brown, at least for this particular seat, would be a better choice.
Huh. Well, I think the Democrats have, you know, botched this, because you know, Paul Hackett was on Hardball last night with Chris Matthews, and he said he's not going to, not, you know, as of right now, he's not running for office ever again. And I'm like, it's a shame. You know, we need Iraq war veterans in the party to articulate the voice of the anti, you know, not really anti-war, but get the troops out movement. You know what I mean? And then everybody said he had a future in the party. Just he had to learn to control his mouth, because I remember he was on Matthews' show once before, and he said something about Bush's, you know, supposed drug use, and somewhere else before he said he called Bush a chicken hawk and all this stuff. Like, you know, that's out of line. But I mean, they should have gotten some handler to him sooner, you know, to get him, you know, in the mode. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I think that there's a certain element of truth to that. And looking at it from a sports perspective, in some ways you have to look at Hackett as being a rookie,
mm-hmm.
Playing with a bunch of veterans, and he is not particularly skilled in the ways of politics. I mean, mm-hmm. that can be a good thing and a bad thing, mm-hmm. but, you know, he's like a hotshot rookie who comes in and is blowing his mouth off about all these things that he wants to do. Yeah. Some of it is definitely very refreshing for people who are tired of politicians being so careful with how they word
and program, too.
But on the other hand, you want somebody who has some experience. And I know that, you know, a lot of us, including myself, look at politicians and say, why don't you say what you believe? But, you know, there's a reason that they don't necessarily say everything that they, on impulse, because they need to be very careful, or they're going to alienate a voter base. And they need to get themselves elected. They need to raise tremendous amounts of money. And we wish that that wasn't true, but it is true.
Yeah.
And that experience in some circumstances definitely does count.
So basically,
they're experienced players that are all pros, and that there are rookies that come in that have great talent that sometimes just have to sit on the bench and keep their mouth shut. And maybe this was a case where he didn't keep his mouth shut and he got burnt.
Yeah, so basically, if we're doing a sports analogy, I guess Hackett would be like the Jim McMahon of politics, and he needed like a Mike Ditka, Coach Ditka, to get him in line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a little bit, or Terrell Owens.
There you go.
You know, some of those guys. You know, and I'm not just saying that that's absolutely the case, but mm-hmm. you know, he's been a little bit
outspoken,
you know, shoot from the hip.
Mm-hmm.
It is
refreshing
and a detriment.
Yeah, it's good and bad. I just think he needs somebody there to actually, you know, when it's appropriate, when it's not appropriate, you know, you can't go off on these, you know, crazy stories about Bush, you know, and the drug use, because that's never been, you know, substantiated, and then, you know, spout them on national TV. It makes you look like you're a lunatic. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, actually, the Ebnetter in the chat room was asking about the story. It's not on our list, but the story of that one guy, I think it's Fred, he goes around and he pickets at the funerals for the Iraqi soldiers that have died at their funerals.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? That's out of line, too. You let the poor family, you know, have their, you know, solemn service for their son or daughter who was killed in Iraq. They don't need somebody picketing the funeral. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, my feeling is that the soldiers really demand or deserve as much respect as we can all give them. I mean, they're there to do a job.
Absolutely.
And they might not necessarily agree with the policies of the government.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're fighting and they're asked to do something. They go and do it. And, you know, it's a very difficult, impossible situation. And you die. And then somebody's, you know, trying to make political hay out of a very horrible, horrible personal and family event, mm-hmm. I think is reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, picking on the soldiers, I mean, the person you should be picking on is Bush, you know, because he's ultimately the one that signed off on this. A lot of them say, oh, it's Cheney's fault and Rumsfeld. I go, that's BS. Bush is the one that, he's the commander-in-chief. He's the one that sent these troops to Iraq. You know, he's got their blood on his hands, you know.
Well, yeah, and plus he's the one that won't even recognize that they come back. You can't take pictures of their coffins, and you can't, you know, there's no public display. He hasn't gone to any funerals. You know, that's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. And then what else we want to talk about? Your player of the week is Senator Pat Roberts.
Yes, Senator Roberts. Mm. Pretty amazing performance. You know, not only did he has managed to sort of scuttle or delay any investigation into the wiretaps last week. It seemed like he was going to be able to completely close it out, but two Republican senators, Snow and Hagel, said that they would vote against him. So behind closed doors, he got them to adjourn until March 7th, and during that time, he's hoping to find ways to delay it again, but he wants to just completely kibosh the investigation into the wiretap issues. Shortly after that, he came out and said that he did think that Congress should have some sort of oversight on this whole program, but he did not specify what that oversight should be. So on the one hand, he completely backs the administration. On the other hand, he has distanced himself to some degree from the administration and developed a certain independence, which is going to help him further in his home state in any election should he need to show some independence from the president. But it's clear that he is a major player for the administration. This is the same senator who has delayed any investigation into 9/11 in the Select Committee of Intelligence, and he managed to delay that to the point where it's almost dead. So it's clear that he's worked hand in hand with the administration to try to help them, delaying not only the 9/11 stuff but all the pre-war intelligence leading up to the Iraq War.
Well,
there's been calls for investigations about that as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Actually, Ebner is back on the story about the guy picketing the Iraqi war. Soldiers have died at their funerals. She's saying the guy is claiming that the troops are dying because God is destroying America for approving of homosexuality. If he's doing that, I need to throw a net over him. I mean, you know, what the hell? I mean, homosexuality has been around since the beginnings of time, right?
Well, we certainly know that there are a lot of wacky people in the world.
Absolutely.
If one person who's a nut job is going to go do something like that, you can't really stop them.
Yeah. Well, still.
As we know, that religion is a definite problem these days. And whether it's the extreme right Christian fundamentalist in the United States or the extreme right Islamic fundamentalists in the Middle East.
Yeah, how about that with those cartoons? I mean, I can't believe this is still cranking away. I mean, this is like, what, the third week of these riots and these people, you know, now it's the Italian consulate in Libya that's torched. I mean, you know, they say Iran and Syria are stoking the fires of this, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's certainly more than just a cartoon issue. These governments, I think, are really taking advantage of the situation. There's also the fact that the Muslims in these countries are influenced to a very large degree by very fundamentalist groups, and it is an exceedingly serious problem for Europe, and it will be for the United States. There was a very interesting statistic saying that 40% of British Muslims want Sharia law introduced into parts of Britain.
Really?
40% of British Muslims. And the Muslims, as they move into Europe, are trying to push for very conservative social structures. And this is something that's, it's almost, I don't know if it's a disease or whatever, but you know, when people talk about the clash of cultures, mm-hmm. I think that it's very real, it's very scary, and that you have a very aggressive, militaristic group of people that are using a religion for legitimate or illegitimate reasons to further their ambitions.
True.
You can, you know, I wrote about this on my website, mm-hmm. saying that, you know, that Muhammad was a warrior. He led armies. He conquered large areas of land. You know, he was a warrior prophet, and that this is part of their religion. And it has evolved to some degree in various areas where we have, it has become more modern in a sense of being more, I wouldn't say secular, but mm-hmm. more accepting of other people and other religions. But that particular religion is one of dominance.
Mm-hmm.
You do it my way or it's all over.
Yeah, my way or the highway. What my idea, I don't know if you've been listening to the program, I said, you know, can't we trot out Muhammad Ali? I mean, he's so loved in that part of the world. You think he could, you know, I know the man can't talk, but I mean, at least send him over there and do something, to issue a statement to try and calm these people down. I mean, something's got to be done because this is going and going and going.
Hey, if it would work, that'd be great. But I think that the issues are much deeper. You know, you've got a poor, a backward, uneducated, large numbers of people that have very, very few options in life, and they're turning to religion to provide them with a lot of answers, and they're angry. Their governments haven't provided them with a future, and they don't know. They see things going on in the West, and they see people leading a good life that they don't have. It's a real problem.
Yeah. Now, but we only have a few minutes left. You must talk about Palestine and Hamas and the funding. That's really turned into a political hot potato too, huh?
It has, and I can certainly understand the position of the West, certainly the United States and Israel, from a political standpoint. You know, they don't want to support terrorism, mm-hmm. but if you don't support them in some way, they have to get money, mm-hmm. and the only place that they're going to get it is from countries that are friendly to them, who are close by, and those are the worst countries in the world, whether they're getting money from fundamentalists in Saudi Arabia or getting it directly from Iran. I mean, if Hamas is going to rely 100% on Iran, all of Palestine is going to be tied to Iran. That's a very serious problem. Mm. And we have to find a way to somehow mitigate that influence. We obviously don't want to support terrorism, but I think there's going to be a lot of back-channel negotiations going on that nobody, or we certainly know nothing about, because I am sure that the White House understands that, and they aren't going to admit that they're going to support any Hamas government. But I bet there's going to be a lot of stuff that goes on that we don't see.
Yeah, well, Condi Rice is over in that part of the world right now, I believe. Where's she? I think she's in Egypt right now or somewhere over there. So she's going right into the lion's den over there. I mean, especially with the riots with the cartoons and everything. I mean, now that the stories are coming out that somehow some of these countries, the rioting is starting to blame the United States for these cartoons as a way to destabilize the countries and all that. I mean, it's just rolling out of control, huh?
Well, they look at the United States as being the center of everything in the West, the prime motivator or mover. They're the major player, the most valuable player, the coach. They're directing everything from their perspective. And if Denmark did something, they ultimately think that the United States was responsible for I don't know what reason, but they just look at the great Satan and think that, you know, everything comes from him or us.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, like we said it last couple of weeks that they're wanting the country of Denmark to apologize for the newspaper, which has nothing to do with the government, for printing those cartoons. I mean, it's like the same thing with Newsweek when they did that whole thing with the Quran being flushed down the toilet. They wanted Bush to apologize for Newsweek. He can't do that. It's a privately run magazine.
Only that, but the United States is based on the idea of freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might not say this is necessarily freedom of speech, but I think that it does have a lot to do with freedoms. And the second that you start to submit to somebody else's demands that you are not allowed to say things, think things, do things, because it's insulting, you're restricting who you are, and you no longer have those freedom, that freedom of speech. Mm. So you can't do that. You just say, no, forget it. You know, you've got to grow up. This is the way the world works.
Yeah.
Because it's not a gray area. A gray area, they win. It's a yes or no.
Yeah.
And it's like an on-off switch. There's no halfway about this.
Yeah, now we have like about a minute left. Now, did you want to talk about Brian Gumbel for a few seconds?
Oh, yeah. Well, I say, you know, I went back to my fabulous fumble of the week.
There you go.
Saying that there were a number of things, just real quickly, I hit over, because it was a tough choice this week. I mean, Michael Chertoff was a winner because of this port thing, but I thought that Brian Gumbel made a statement on HBO about how the Winter Olympics were so boring and that the best athletes weren't necessarily there because there were no blacks. And I thought that was a pretty inappropriate, politically incorrect statement about sports.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And then, of course, you know, Lindsay Jacob Ellis had that terrible fall in the snowboard cross.
Yeah, that was horrible.
A terrible fumble of her own. And, you know, just immaturity and youthful exuberance. And I feel sorry for her.
I mean, she was showboating. That's what that was.
Yeah, you know, she's way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
She's 20 years old. She's going to win a gold medal. She goes up and it's like, yay. She throws, all in a way, sort of throws her hands up and she trips and falls, you know.
Unbelievable.
It was too bad.
Yeah.
You know, one of those things. And she lost. and the other was this district judge, David Traeger. And he threw out a lawsuit by Maher Arar, I believe it was. He was a guy in Canada who was rendered in JFK, sent to Syria, and held in a Syrian prison for almost a year and tortured, and then released when it was found that he had he was completely innocent. And he tried to bring up a lawsuit against the government because for being seized.
Yeah.
And this guy, David Traeger, threw out the lawsuit saying that he couldn't sue the government for national security reasons, and they couldn't reveal any secrets, and basically tough luck.
Really? Well, Chip, we're at the end of our segment here with you. Hello?
Excuse me?
We're at the end of our segment.
Okay. Well,
right.
Sean, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And stop by my website.
We will.
And,
Political Sports.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thank you very much, Chip. And that was Chip. Bye. And that was Chip from PoliticalSports.com with our political discussion. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Josh Hathaway from BlogCritics.org. This is Sean O'Max, Sean Daly. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Hands in the-
Attention, see that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And we are back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And this is Subject to Discussion. We said that live at LVRocks.com and also affiliated with antiradio.net. And now we'll be joined by Josh Hathaway from blogcritics.org. Wow, what song is this? Wow, that's pretty cool. We have actually a song now for Blog Critics. Oh, that's cool. Oh. And Josh Hathaway, are you with us, sir?
I am here. Hi, Sean. How's it going?
We finally came up with some entrance music for blogcritics.org. There you go. It's the official blogcritics.org entrance music.
I love it.
There you go.
That's a great choice.
Now, you have to mention it on the board there now because they forgot for a few weeks to mention the program on the board, but mention it to Philip and Eric and all of them. You got your official entrance music.
I will let them know that I got to be the first to get the official entrance music, and I can confirm they've got us up on the overall Blog Critics. They've got an announcement about the show.
Absolutely.
So, we are all cross-promoted.
There you go. Because you know what? Because most of my guests now are all Blog Critics. Chip from Political Sports, he's a Blog Critic on the politics side. He had Koenig Rules. He's the Battlestar Galactica aficionado, and he's over on the TV film side. So all my rotating guests are all Blog Critics now.
Hey, that's good stuff.
Outstanding. So, actually, the first thing you mentioned it, the second email, but I want to mention that first. And they said two CDs got released today that you want to throw in. One was the with the Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah. Let's start with the Arctic Monkeys. Kind of an amazing thing when you think about all of the great British invasion bands that we've had. Arctic Monkeys last month became the band with the fastest-selling debut album in UK history. And another thing that's been kind of interesting about them, before we talk about the music for a second, is that they kind of did it using sort of the guerrilla internet way. They put a lot of their demos out there on the web, and they were very much word of mouth over there in the UK. There was a bidding war for them, and they set records, and they're kind of the big thing of the moment over there across the pond.
Really? Well, that's cool. And then I also want to talk about with Cracker?
Yeah. So anyway, they finally got the U.S. release the album. It's good, not great on the Arctic Monkeys. And then Cracker, any of you folks who are kind of my age, 90s alternative, coming of age sort of thing, Cracker was a band that had a couple of staples of modern rock radio, Low, and also Teen Angst, you know, the song What the World Needs Now is Another Folk Singer, Like I Need a Hole in My Head. Which has to be one of the great choruses, you know, ever.
Yeah.
And let's see, the other line is, the world needs a new Frank Sinatra so I can get you in bed. You know, good stuff there. And they just released a compilation, and there's been about three Cracker compilations already, but kind of what makes this one unique is that the band had some input on this one. They finally sort of embraced the idea that they're at a point in their career where it's time to start hitting the greatest hits, the greatest hits package, and so it's a real good listen. Something again that just came out today worth checking out.
Really? Now, also you want to mention about Nicholas Shea. You say he tries to outflank Kevin Federline. Yeah, I read that he actually applied for spousal support from Jessica Simpson. Is that correct?
Well, my understanding is that he's reserving the right to do it as they negotiate their divorce settlement. You know, along with that, after I sent you this email, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston's financial terms of their divorce became official today.
Really?
And that's kind of what Simpson and Lachey are in the process of doing. They filed for divorce, and they're now doing the legal wrangling, and Nick Lachey showing what kind of confidence he has in his own career, and I'm sorry, just kind of showing some weaselness here. His reserved the right to ask Jessica Simpson to cut him some checks.
Really? Now, what was any of the big details from the Brad Pitt Aniston divorce that we should know about?
Well, the biggest thing, and I didn't read the full story. It looks like she's going to get to keep their Beverly Hills estate, which is, you know, like a
mansion,
multi-bajillion dollar estate. She's going to get to keep that, and you know, they divvied up the rest of the property. You know, there not being any kids or anything like that. Mm. I don't think that there was anything all that explosive. But, you know, unlike Nick Lachey, whose career's over, Aniston and Pitt are both going to continue to work and get paychecks. So, you know, kind of the financial terms of that just didn't...
So you think Nick Lachey's career's over? I mean, I think he can make a career of going on that Charmed show, huh?
Yeah. Well, I think he's got a shelf life a little longer, making some cameos and things like that. But you know, let's face it, the guy didn't make it as a singer. 98 Degrees was probably the least popular of the boy bands. Mm. His solo albums have done nothing, even when you know that Newlywed show was at its highest. He still couldn't crack the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, the show did wonders for Jessica Simpson's career.
Yeah.
She's doing commercials, and her music is selling. His hasn't. So, you know, I think he's a little bit insecure about his financial footing, and he probably should be.
Yeah, now, I read in Us Weekly that apparently Jessica Simpson fooled around on Nick Lachey with some other singer. I can't remember whatever the hell his name is, but... you know, so that, you know, broke in Us Weekly, so I don't know if that's true or not. You know, Us Weekly, I don't know how credible they are, but, you know, it's interesting. She was the one that, well, they had a story about that he had some kind of stripper gate as well, that Nick Lachey had some kind of stripper party or something.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I think what is interesting is when the split was first announced, the first rumors to come out were that he was the one that was unfaithful in the marriage, and now... Over these last few weeks, there have been rumors that it was her. I don't think anybody would be shocked to find out that there is infidelity on both sides of the fence. But yeah, it, you know, when it first came out, the news kind of, the portrayal of Nick Lachey was a little bit harsher, and then the worm started to turn against Jessica Simpson. But I think as far as, you know, forget the legality of it. I think from purely a public relations standpoint, Lachey asking Jessica Simpson to write him checks is not going to play real well for him as a leading man in any sort of music or film capacity.
Yeah, and especially with his career, he's going to have that image of a weasel. You know what I'm saying? And he can't go out and earn money. I mean, he could go on some sitcom. Hell, if Freddie Prinze Jr. and the other one could do some meaningless comedy, Lachey can show up in some WB comedy or, you know, whatever the hell it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about the, what else here, the Oscars. Now, that's October 5th or something. When are the Oscars?
Well, the Oscars are March 5th.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. So they're coming up. That's why I wanted to go ahead and do that because I think this. Well, I don't know if my calendar's. This may be your last show before the Oscars, or you may have one more. Oh. So I thought we'd go ahead and chat that up for a few minutes.
Okay. Now, best picture. What's your odds on that? I'll give my idea, but what's your best picture?
Well, because when we get down to the acting, I think that Brokeback Mountain is going to get shut out. I think
really?
Brokeback Mountain is going to take Best Picture.
So do I.
The only other thing that could sneak in there, there was some late-breaking momentum for Crash. Now, my opinion is this. It was a foregone conclusion for Brokeback pretty early, and I bet you that the early ballots push it over the edge.
Mm.
But... the only one that I think with any upset potential is Crash, but it's Brokeback's to lose.
Really? Really? Huh. Not Love Bug? Love Bug won't win a Best Picture? No?
No. I think it's got to be Brokeback here.
Herbie Love Bug doesn't stand a chance against Brokeback Mountain. Now,
Have you seen
the movie?
It will live, you know, fondly in all of our hearts.
Actually, Herbie was out here in front of the LV Rock Studios a few months back in an alley. I don't know if it's the real one or is a car painted exactly like it over here. So I don't know what that was all about.
You can say the same thing about Lindsay Lohan, can't you?
Yeah, I think she's been in some alleys lately too. You know what I'm saying? Now,
some alley and some fake parts, absolutely.
Now, have you seen Brokeback Mountain?
You know, I haven't.
No.
You know, we talked about this a few weeks back. You know, I don't like chick flicks or dick flicks. That one was yours. And so, you know, essentially what it comes down to me, I don't go see love stories at the movie theater all that often.
No.
Now, if this thing wins Best Director and this thing wins Best Picture, I will probably rent it. Mm. But, no, I've sat it out to this point because regardless of hype surrounding it. It's just not the type of movie that I would go see either way. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last movie I saw, to be honest with you, was Syriana. I enjoyed that movie. It made me think a little bit more about the oil business and everything else. I thought it was, but that's a movie you have to sit and pay attention to because there's so many. It's like Battlestar Galactica. There's so many stories being weaved in and out of this movie. You have to keep your mind. You know, you can't get up and go to the bathroom, or you'll miss something. It's a key to the whole movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and see, you're a veteran host. You knew to cater to your battle stuff.
That's
people.
Right.
That's very good stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
This is sweeps month, too. So I think Joan Hunt's coming on. I think next week we have more sex talk on here. Yeah, we need to spike the ratings a little bit for our sex talk.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get that book in, absolutely.
Yeah, right. And then also, best director. Who's going to be the best director, do you think?
I think they're going to give it to Ang Lee for Brokeback for a couple reasons.
Really?
One, obviously, I think Brokeback is just going to clean up and... Ang Lee has made some critically acclaimed movies, mm-hmm. And I think people are willing to forget he had anything to do with The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, he did that movie, that's right.
Yes, he took that one. And, you know, I think, look, he took the big payday because he was making these very well-respected, mm-hmm. pleasant art movies,
yeah.
And, you know, he was getting paid about $3 for them.
Yeah, low
so
revenue.
So he decided to take a big budget. He made The Incredible Hulk. It was terrible.
Well, you can't blame him. Yeah, look at Joel Schumacher. He took the big payday for the Batman movies, you know?
You know, look, the thing to me is I will never, as long as you come out and say, hell yeah, I did it for the money,
mm-hmm.
I have no problem with anybody mm-hmm. doing it for the money. When I get annoyed is when somebody tells me, you know, especially you see this in sports a lot, I did it to win, or I did this because I really love the art or something like that, and it's like, yeah, I'm sure the $20 million you got for it had nothing to do with
true.
It.
True, or I like the story. You know, I'm like, oh, give me a break. You know, Incredible Hulk, give me a break. How can that be a good story? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Now, it was a bad TV show. It's going to be a bad movie.
That's right. Now, best actor. Who's going to be best actor?
Well, I think best actor, this guy has, Philip Seymour Hoffman for Capote has pretty much won all of the awards leading up to it.
Really?
He's well respected within sort of the Hollywood community. And, if Hollywood is looking to, if Hollywood is looking to reward films that, had adventurous, depiction, you know, homosexuality, mm-hmm. homosexual characters, Truman Capote lived a, interesting life, and you know, this one didn't really last in the theaters long. My understanding is that he was fabulous in this. He's won every award leading up to it, and I think he's going to get his Oscar this year.
Really? Now, I that's where I differ. I think that Joaquin Phoenix might win this for Johnny Cash, you know, for Walk the Line, huh?
I would love to see that happen. Joaquin Phoenix. Now, see, here's where this gets interesting. At the Golden Globes, where they separate musical and comedy on one side and drama on the other, Joaquin Phoenix did win a Golden Globe, and you know, he's really come into his own as an actor. He was great in Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm.
I think he won't win it this year, but I think his day is coming. I think they're going to give it to Hoffman.
Really?
But I think Joaquin Phoenix's day is coming. He's really turned into a hell of an actor.
Really? Wow, we'll see. And best actress, who do you think is going to win it? Reese Witherspoon or who else?
Absolutely.
Is it? Judi Dench?
Absolutely. It's Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Same reasoning kind of behind Philip Seymour Hoffman. Now, I think somebody may have stolen one of these and one of the other categories, but pretty much across the line, Reese Witherspoon has been winning these lead-ups. And, you know, the other thing is because I think Joaquin's going to get edged out, and because the movie Walk the Line got edged out, I think Reese Witherspoon's going to win this one. Hollywood loves to, you know, give these beauty queens who finally get that one great role. They did it with Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And, I think Reese wins this year, yeah.
So they kind of give that movie a consolation prize by giving her the Oscar to the best actress, huh?
I think so.
How about best supporting actor?
This one is really, really, really tight. I could see this going a number of ways. Personally, I think they're not... There will be a lot of people who will want to give it to Clooney because he's made some edgy movies and taken some stands politically, and I think, you know, he's kind of a mover and a shaker in Hollywood. There will be some people who will want to give it to them. I think he's going to get an Oscar. I think he's going to get it for the screenplay for Good Night and Good Luck. But he could win this one. Matt Dillon's been around for forever. I think that there's some probably some sentiment to give to him. I went out on a limb here. I think Paul Giamatti for Cinderella Man's going to win it.
Really?
But it could also be Jake Gyllenhaal. The only one who's probably not going to win it, my understanding is that William Hurt is in a history of violence for about 10 minutes.
Oh.
So I could really, you know, I went ahead and took Giamatti, but, you know, if you took one of the other three main guys in this category and said, you know, I think this is who's going to win it, I'd probably tell you, yeah, you're right.
Really? Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, Cinderella Man, that was like a bomb in the box office, wasn't it? Isn't it the movie that they offered a refund for it or something? I remember it came back out. I can't remember exactly what it was. And they offered something.
You're right. You've got the story right.
It's like a Rocky movie.
The big problem with Cinderella Man was that they were stupid in how they marketed it. They thought that they could put a serious film with star power like Russell Crowe and Renee Zellweger and Ron Howard, who directed it, and put it out in the summer amidst, you know, the summer blockbusters.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible idea. This needed to be a winter film when the more serious Oscar-type things like your Munich, like your Brokeback Mountain and things like that come out. And so then they tried that promotion.
Oh, hello? Uh-oh. What happened? Uh-oh. Oh, I think we lost Josh. Oh, well, Josh, if you want, you can call back. I think we got disconnected there. Well, we lost him in mid-sentence. Well, that's all right. We got just a few minutes left. So if he calls back, we'll put him right back on or whatever. And, well, first, Best Supporting Actress. I don't even know who's up for that. How bad will the show be? I don't know. Well, can it be worse than the Grammys? I don't know about that either. Usually what the Oscars usually run 3 hours, I believe. So they'll probably run at least 3 hours. And there he is. He might be back on the line there.
Yeah.
There we go. Sorry about that.
What happened there?
I don't know. So anyway.
I hope that wasn't me. I apologize if it was. Wow.
No, who knows? And now we're at, where are we at? We're Best Supporting Actress.
Yes. I think we're down to Best Supporting Actress. And I think Rachel Weisz, you know, I've said it three times now, but she has won a lot of the awards leading up to everything. So,
really?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that those continue to be good predictors and that she wins. The upset special could be, I think that there will be some people who will want to give Brokeback some type of performance award other than directing. Michelle Williams could sneak in for this one, but I think it's Rachel Weisz who will win.
Really? So pretty much you're saying Brokeback Mountain would pretty much be shut out of the except for the Best Picture, huh?
I think it's going to win Picture and Director, and I think it's also going to win Adapted Screenplay.
Really? So you have three.
I don't know if it's in the music, you know, if it's in the score or anything. You know, they may win Best Original Score or something like that. I think they may. They will try to give it a good night, but I just don't see it.
Huh.
None of the actors in this movie won a lot in sort of, you know, your Golden Globes or in your, you know, Screen Actors Guild Award or you know, different sanctioning bodies like that. And generally, you know, a lot of those same people vote on the Oscars. Now, they're not 100% identical voting bodies, but they are very similar. I think that if these folks haven't been winning the awards up until now, I don't think that's going to change right away.
Really? So you don't think the Oscars will go into the tank, so to speak, for Brokeback Mountain? See, I think the opposite. I think that's what's going to happen. I think you know, all this has been, you know, a misnomer for the Oscars, and I think they're going to walk away with a lot more awards than everybody's saying.
You may prove to be absolutely correct on it. I think Best Picture and Best Director, you know, Those are generally two of the last awards of the evening. Though, you know, Best Picture is obviously the biggie. I don't think it's going to walk away empty-handed by any means. But you know, kind of like the Grammys, you know, wussed away from giving out anything controversial and decided to give everything to U2. I think Hollywood will reward Brokeback, but I don't know. This may sound a little conspiratorial. I think they will temper just how much they kind of extend their middle finger to, quote, you know, middle
mainstream
America, where, for right and or wrong, there are some people who were not exactly comfortable with, you know, Brokeback Mountains.
Maybe you're right. I think the opposite. I think they're going to go in over the cliff with this movie. But we'll see what happens. Now, actually, I want to talk about the Willie Nelson's Brokeback song, Cowboys are Frequently Secretly Fond of Each Other. What is that?
I got to hear the song, and you know, it's funny to me. Willie Nelson is like 9,000 years old, and the timing of it seemed a little bit crass that all of a sudden he decides to cover this song. My understanding is that he didn't actually write it. This is a song that was written by somebody else a few years ago. He covered it, and I listened to it, and I guess what's remarkable to me is just how ordinary the song is. For example, you know, if this was a song about a man and a woman, I think people would listen to it and say, okay, yeah, you know, another, you know, it's nice, it's Willie Nelson, you know, if you like that sort of thing. It wasn't, I didn't think it was anything particularly noteworthy. It's getting a lot of attention in the press because of obviously the title of the song and sort of the timing of it. And I was a little bit surprised. I figured by this point in Willie Nelson's career, he didn't need to chase ambulances.
No, he's relegated to playing Uncle Jesse now, probably in the sequel to the Dukes of Hazzard movie, which I'm sure we're going to see.
Bite your tongue.
I almost guarantee we'll see a sequel to that movie. And I also want to do a quick Grammy wrap-up. You two pretty much swept the Grammys, and Bono, or I can call Bono, Sonny Bono. I got Sonny Bono in the brain. I got you, babe, right?
Yeah.
They should sing that song at Brokeback Mountain, huh? I Got You, Babe?
Maybe we should get Bono and Willie Nelson to duet on I Got You, Babe.
There you go. Do a duet. Bono pledges to die for our sins. He's the one that's kind of going over the cliff. I mean, he's a singer for crying out loud. Now he's telling the rest of us how to live our lives, you know?
You know, the wife to whom I am married and I were watching the Grammys, and when U2 won the first award they won for the night, she kind of said to me, do you think Bono wonders why the parts of the Bible he wrote got left out?
Yeah,
I think that, you know, look, Bono has always sort of had a very larger-than-life persona and very much a social conscience. And, you know, he's taken on some issues that aren't sexy. I respect him. I applaud him. And I happen to like the U2 album. I was hoping it'd win when we talked about it a couple moons ago.
Yeah.
But he's really gotten annoying, and he's gotten sanctimonious. And I think what he needs to do for the sake of the band, if he still cares about being in the band, is to shut up for about 6 months and go home and start working on another record, because the overexposure factor is really, and I say this as a U2 fan, but it's time for Bono to shut up for a few minutes.
Yeah, people are sick of hearing about him. I mean, same thing. I'm not going to go off on this tangent, but you know, you watch NBC. They have these ridiculous public service sounds, which drive me up the wall. The More You Know, or something like that. Those commercials drive me nuts. We have Josh Duhamel. We have all these people telling, "Oh, spend some time with your family." Yada. Who are these celebrities to tell us how to live our lives? It's like they're talking. Those ads feel like they're talking down to me. I don't know about the rest of everybody listening. Those ads, as soon as I see them, I want to throw something at the TV, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, there was a joke back in the 80s. Some entertainer said, I didn't know apartheid was wrong until Bono told me. It's kind of the same thing, but, you know, the lecture on how to live your life by the Hollywood contingency that, you know, look, they're all talented at what they do, but, you know, look at the personal lives of most of the top celebrities. I mean, what do we start the show off with? Talking about Nick Lachey and Brad Pitt and, you know, all these folks getting divorced and cheating on their wives. Don't give me a lecture about going and spending time with my kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and before we let you go, we want to mention briefly about less than a month till Sopranos Season 6.
I can go ahead and give you a precursor now.
Uh-oh.
Until you get sick of me and having me on the show. This is my favorite show in the world. I've seen the previews. Cannot wait for the season to start. The trailers that they're running on HBO look really, really good. I think that this is going to be another home run season, or at least I'm hoping so, because I still think, even coming in on its sixth season, this is still the best show TV's got going for it. And
really?
March 12th is when it premieres.
We'll see. Well, Josh Hathaway, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our segment with you.
Sean, I appreciate it.
No problem. We'll have you on again.
Sounds real good. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
And that was Josh Hathaway from blogcritics.org with our pop culture discussion. It was very enlightening, talking about the Oscars, a little bit of Brokeback Mountain update, and I still think there's going to be a Dukes of Hazzard sequel, and you know they're going to throw that at us. I know it as soon as, you know, I know the, you know, skin in the back of my hand, you know what I mean? Go ahead.
The band that did that remake, or the Willie Nelson, the band is Pansy Division.
Pansy Division. Anyway, Willie Nelson. I could sing "For All the Girls I've Loved Before." See, I could do Willie Nelson too. I tell you, should be up on that stage at Caesars, you know. And actually, I want to mention that they had the ladies from The View are at Caesars this week. I'm over at Caesars this week, and I did bump into Barbara Walters walking through the casino. I couldn't believe it. I'm walking through, young man. I turned around, I'm like, oh my God, it's Barbara Walters looking for directions. And then she's looking for the Mesa Grill over at Caesars. She had reservations there. They put, oh, you have to go down here to the left, or yada, yada, yada. And then past the, you know, Elton John's got a gift shop in the hotel. I said, you have to go past the Elton John gift shop. It's on the left. He goes, Elton John's got a gift shop? I'm like, yeah, so is Celine Dion has a gift shop. You know, they all have gift shops. But I thought that was funny. But yeah, the Barbara Walters is there. I don't think that Meredith Vieira is there, because I didn't see her list on in the computer as staying in the room, unless she's under an alias. And then we have the who else is there? Star Jones is at, well, they left. They did three shows. They shot three shows on Monday, and they shot two shows today. So they're done for the week now. So for all those of you who think it's live, I hate to burst of your bubble, but it's all taped. I had no idea. I thought they shot all five of the shows live. Yeah. Oh, well. What else? Who else was there? Meredith Vieira. Somebody else. Oh, we had the heart benefit there on Monday as well. It was the first time that Elton John, Celine Dion, and Jerry Seinfeld were on a stage together, and they did a heart benefit for the Harrah's Entertainment employees who were lost their homes due to the hurricane. So that was nice. But yeah, Barbara Walters, I came face to face. I should have asked her to come on the program, but you know, come on. You know, this is Barbara Walba, and I want to thank Ebnetter. She's going to send me some kind of footage of something, so I thank you very much. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. We got Anorexic Pillow, BSG Group Apollo, DJ Radiohead, Ebnetter, Gray Coupon, Josh, Lil Bucks, Night Sky, and myself, and Sam. So once again, I want to thank antiradio.net for adding the program to its lineup of impressive programs, and we thank them very much for the sponsor. I need sponsors, and then for the affiliation with the program. So like I said, this is not, you know, I'm not doing brain surgery here. I'm just trying to give everybody a little different approach on the news. You know, give them a little bit of politics, give them a little news, give them a little bit of pop culture, and give them a little bit of sci-fi galactica. You know, because you know everybody's sick of these conservative radio shows, you know, talking down to them, preaching how we're all a bunch of anti-patriotic, you know, homophobes or whatever it is if we don't agree with the Bush administration. This is ridiculous. You know, this war is wrong. You know, we're spending billions and billions for some worthless war in Iraq, which is ridiculous. You know, we should be able to spout out about it, you know, I think, but oh well. And I think our guest is on the line. There we go. And we are joined by Aaron Douglas from Battlestar Galactica, Tyrell. Aaron, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Hi. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
I didn't mean to spout off a little bit about Bush before you came on, but it drives me up the wall about this whole war business. And then, I don't know, I could go on and on about this. I mean, you know, we're not supposed to disagree with the man. If we do disagree, we're anti-patriotic or we're viewed as freaks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's a very strange world that is inhabited by the people of the U.S., that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're from Canada. I mean, how do they view this war in Iraq? Do they think it's also a worthless endeavor over there in Iraq, or what?
I think that the majority of Canadians are along the same lines as the majority of the rest of the world, and really have a hard time understanding why. I think we know why. Mm. Why the war is taking place, but we don't necessarily agree with the whys and the reasons for it. And they certainly has shown it's come to the fore that the reasons they went over, the reasons they said they were going, are invalid. And so most of Canadians, you know, probably 80% of Canadians, maybe even more, just think that it's not really the best thing to be doing at this point in time.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, at the beginning of the program, I read this poll results that 56% of the American people think the administration should be brought up on impeachment charges. You know, I mean,
you get Bill Clinton does something that the majority of presidents have done throughout U.S. history and leaders of almost every country, and he gets impeached, and and Bush does what he does, and it's all fine. So whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from another country, so it's not really my place to
criticize. No. Well, no, it's a worldwide issue because, you know, what we've done in Iraq is affecting the rest of the world. You know. And same thing with these cartoons and everything. I can go off on and on about this, but you know, I have a friend. I told you about my friend who used to work at CNN. Him and I banter back and forth. Just it's amazing the state this country is in. I mean, it's amazing. Now back to Battlestar Galactica. How you been doing?
I've been good.
Yeah.
I've been good. Yeah, we're on hiatus and we got another month and a week of that or something. Oh, no, I think they moved it to the 10th. April 10th, we start shooting season 3, so I've been off since the beginning of December. I'm starting to get a little bored.
Now, do you have any projects between now and then or anything you worked on?
No, I haven't worked on anything, but actually I've been doing a TV show next week called Whistler, and that is, I think it's a Canadian show. I think it's on CTV. So.
Really? What kind of show is that?
It's a show about a hotel that is in, it's based actually in Whistler, the world famous ski hill, and it's about one of the hotels and sort of everything that goes on behind the scenes in a hotel and the crazy guests and all the shenanigans that go on with the staff. And so I think it'll sort of be like that show Las Vegas, but instead of being a casino, it'll be a ski resort.
Oh, so it's a drama?
Yeah.
Really? That sounds interesting. You know, years ago out here in the United States, we had that show Hotel with James Brolin and Connie Stelica and all them, and it started off as a serious drama, then it turned into like a Love Boat, you know. So it's,
yeah, I have no idea about this one. This hasn't started airing yet. They're just still shooting it, so I'm looking forward to seeing it come out. You know Nick Lee?
Yes.
Krychek?
Yes.
Yeah, he's one of the leads of this show.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah, well, he never really stopped working. He works all the time. He's a great actor. Huh. And he's a great guy, and he's one of the leads on the show. And actually, Candace, who plays Dualla, mm-hmm. has a recurring part on this show just for a few episodes before Battlestar starts back up again.
Well, good for y'all. I mean, I don't want to add Katie on. She's got a couple movies, and a few months ago, her and I lamented that, you know, you think NBC and Universal will be pushing you guys for some, like, Law & Order episodes and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you'd think so, but they just don't for some reason. I don't know. I think maybe when the show ends, when Battlestar ends, they might pop us off to go do guest stars in other shows or stuff like that. But I think right now they're sort of happy that we're the Battlestar guys and just let them be the Battlestar guys.
Yeah. Now with the show going to the third season, how do you feel about that? You know, I mean, is it still, you know, great? You know, I'm sure you love being on the show, but is it turning into like a more of a regular grind now than, you know?
No, not at all.
No.
Because the thing with this show is that there's so many cast members and there's so many storylines that you end up getting a number of episodes off. I think last year, I think I had 4 or 5 episodes where I wasn't even in. So, you know, I'll go, you know, in a month I might work 3 or 4 days, and then, you know, I'll have an episode off. So it's basically that's 2 weeks off, and then I'll have episodes where I have a lot to do So you don't really get burnt out because I think if you were doing this show plus trying to do some other shows at the same time, you'd get a little burnt out. But we're really spaced out enough, and the other thing is we're all really good friends. And so going to work is just it's hysterical. You're laughing your ass off all day, every day, and the crew guys are so much fun. And yeah, I mean we have a great time, so it's really not a grind. And we've been off, like I say, since December 5th. So I've been off for 3 months. I'm starting to get a little antsy.
Yeah.
It's nice to get back to work.
Now, with the off time, now when you do they give you instructions that when you come back, make sure your hair is the same way it was when you left or you don't gain too much weight? I mean, they give you, directions like that?
Yeah, it sort of goes without saying. They don't really have to tell us stuff like that. I mean, if you dramatically want to change something, you have to talk to them about it. Because our show is the next episode could be the same day of the previous episode or the very next day, you really need to stay the same. So if somebody ever sat down and watched it, you know, from season 1 all the way through, you wouldn't really all of a sudden, you know, Tyrell's now 20 pounds lighter and his hair's 4 inches longer and it's still the same day. You know, you can't do that. But I know that Katie wanted to grow her hair out or something like that, so they were starting to let her do that. And at the end of end of season, end of filming season two, the chief looked drastically different than his normal sort of physical appearance. So I have, I've got a month to sort of get back to that place of my hair.
So we mean the chief's going to be in some kind of different state at the end of the season? Or what?
Everybody. I'm not
really
going to give anything away,
no.
But everybody is looks complete. Not everybody, but, well, yeah, most everybody looks completely different at the end of season episode 20 from where they are right now.
Wow.
It's a quantum leap. It's the show ends in a really, really different place than where it is right now, and it'll be very, very interesting.
Huh.
And then season 3... I haven't seen a script, but from what I understand, season 3 picks up right where season 2 left off, just like season 1 to season 2.
Huh.
And so we all have to kind of get back to where we were. And yeah, no, so I'm not allowed to go lose a bunch of weight and turn into Jamie Bamber and be all fit and handsome.
Well, now your character, you more or less dominated the first 10 episodes. I mean, especially those episodes down the planet. You know, you're there, you the death of Tarn and then Cecinus. I mean, you dominated those first 10 episodes. I mean, they had to be grueling doing those emotional scenes. I mean, after those scenes, you're like, oh my God, I got to go somewhere and punch somebody. You know what I'm saying?
the first 4 episodes of last year, season 2, really hard to film for me. And that was, it was like 32 days of shooting, so that's like a month and a half of real time. And those episodes that you watch it, and it's always somebody is about to die, somebody is dying, or someone has just died. And so I'm, you know, working was constantly in this state of losing people close to me. So it was an emotional grind, and it was a little difficult in that sense, but it was a real honor and a thrill for me to get these scripts from the writers. Those guys, they just write such tremendous stuff for me, and I'm always really, really thrilled and honored and proud to get these scripts. So it was great to be able to do. And then I had those first 4, and then a few little things in sort of 5 and 6, and then I think I had 7 off, or 6 off, and then a little bit in 7 and 8, and then the big one in 9, Flight of Phoenix, which was such a great thing.
Yeah.
And second half of the year, I think I had 3 or 4 episodes where I didn't do anything, so I had a nice sort of easy fall last year, except for 19 and 20, get sort of back to Big Chief stuff. But, they've been great to me. They keep giving me lots of really, really great stuff to do, and I'm really, really pleased.
Well, yeah, and then you went from the scenes on Cobol to back on the ship with Ty, punching in the face.
The hell out of me.
Yeah. And that was pretty good too. I mean, I think you were on before, right? When you filmed that, you said it was great to be in a heavy scene with Michael Hogan. I mean, that was pretty intense too.
Yeah, no, that was Mike. In my opinion, Mike is one of the best actors on the show. I think the guy is just unbelievable, and to be able to just be in a room with him and just sit down and talk at each other for 5 minutes was a great thrill for me. And none of it got edited out. They kept it all in. So. Yeah, no, I was real happy the way that turned out. I thought it was great.
Yeah, then he went from there to Callie killing Boomer in the JFK spinoff, right?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I mean, they did it almost exactly how they had, what's his name, kill...
Zach Ruby.
Yeah. I mean, that was down, the run-up and shooting and everything else. It's like, man, they copied the whole damn thing, you know?
Well, they had pictures of it, and they were showing these pictures of, like stills that were taken from the actual incident, and then also screenshots from like newsreel footage and stuff, and they were going around and they were placing the extras to be like the guys that are the cops and everybody else that are sort of in the background. So it's really like there's one picture in particular where they're saying it was really funny because they were saying to this one of the Marine guys, this huge black guy. And they said, you see this white guy in the white hat and the white suit? Okay, you're him. It's really funny. And this guy just looks at him. He's like, you got to be kidding me. He's going, no. You get to be a white guy just for today. He was laughing. But, it was fun. They really wanted to get it as to mirror real life as close as possible. So
really?
It was very cool.
Actually, Jim, Koenig Rules is asking, does the Chief get a new girl in the new season?
Oh, wow.
You don't know yet, right? You haven't got any of the scripts.
Spoilers.
Huh?
Oh, in season 3, I have no idea.
Yeah. How about end of this season? Well, I doubt it.
You're going to have to watch.
Yeah, because you only have, what, we're this week is 7, so we only have 3 left after this week, I believe.
Is this week at 18?
I believe so. 18, yeah. 19, 20, yeah.
This is the Cylon one where they all sit around. It's just like a Vancey conference.
Huh.
Bunch of Cylons sitting around doing like the final solution to the human problem or something like that.
Huh.
Yeah, and then back 19 is a big episode with Chief's got lots to do there. Some very cool stuff.
Hmm.
That's going to be very shocking.
Yeah, but well, how about that Blackbird scene there? You know, and they destroyed a thing right off the bat. You know what I'm saying?
I know. You know how long it took me to build that thing?
Almost by yourself.
Yeah, and then Apollo goes and blows it up.
Now, are you mechanically inclined? Could you actually have built that thing on your own as Aaron Douglas?
Not even close. I would have burned down the studio if I tried to turn a welder on. I guarantee it.
So maybe
those guys that build those ships are unbelievable. They're so good. The art department and construction guys are amazing.
Yeah.
And but I went over there. I kept going over and checking it out as they were building it. They were building it in a one of the big construction depots across the street from the studio. So I go over there every once in a while just to see how they're coming along. Yeah, they're amazing, those guys.
That's cool. Actually, another question is from Ebnetter. She wonders how do you view the relationship between the chief and the pilots?
How do I view the relationship between the chief and the pilots?
Mm.
I've actually spoken to guys who are chiefs in real life.
Mm.
And they say, you know, you sort of have to treat them with that deference that you are, that they are your superior officer, whether they've just walked on or not. If they've been there for 5 minutes and you've been there for 5 years, you still have to salute them, and they're still above you in the chain of things. But at the same time, the chief is sort of, he's the man. He's the one that's really, or the woman, if that's the case. You're really the one that's in charge, and it's sort of like I just get these things perfect and running and doing everything I can, and you monkeys go out and smash them into things and bring them back broken, and I have to fix them again. I think the chief sort of, he respects the pilots, or not most of them, not quite all of them, but he's not afraid to take somebody around the corner and give him a little thump on the head if he has to, because he knows that Starbuck and Apollo will definitely back him up.
Yeah, well, actually, in that scene in that episode when you were building the Blackbird, Apollo wanted the specific Viper, and you said, no, you put it out of commission. And it's like if you guys don't take care of these ships, they get scrapped. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, a question from Gray Coupon. You know, Gray Coupon. We got Gray Coupon. Is Tyrell at all religious? Did he? Because you said that the character said that he's from Gemini, and his parents were an oracle and a priest.
Yeah. The background on Tyrell is that he is, he's the son of an oracle and a priest, and he's from the most religious planet of the colonies.
Really.
And he grew up with all of that stuff, sort of like heavy-duty fundamentalism. And but where he's at now, I'm not really sure. But there is some of that revealed in episode 19.
Really?
He has a real big, long, exploration of his feelings and sort of what he believes now.
Mm.
I don't know. I think he's sort of gone away from it a bit. But it's interesting. I'm interested to see whether they're going to come back to that or not, because he certainly is. Of everybody on the ship, it would be him and what's the name of the Marine that guards?
Oh, that guarded Rosalind when she was in the jail?
Yeah,
I can't remember his name, but he's the one who's holding the rosary beads or wherever they are.
He's from the same planet.
Really?
Tyrell and that guy are from the same planet, and they would be, you know, sort of considered the go-to spiritual guys, because he'd know it inside and out and all that stuff. Venner, Corporal Venner.
There you go. And actually, Koenig's asking their question. Jim, what was your best scene in season 2 and your worst?
What was my best scene in season 2? let's see.
I think when you had to give the morph to Cicinus, that was pretty powerful.
Cicinus' death was a big one. I think a couple of the scenes in episode 9 I'm rather pleased with.
How about killing that ass on the Pegasus who was going to rape Sharon?
killing Fulvio. There's a couple scenes in 19 that I'm rather pleased about. So you guys have to wait and see that. As far as the worst one, I can tell you which ones were the worst ones to shoot.
Really?
But I don't know. I'm rather fortunate. There's not really the writing's so good that you really have a hard time screwing it up. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, probably that scene you had with on Cobalt with the new Sharon with the Caprica. That was pretty interesting too. You know, it's like you're looking at her like you know her, but you don't know her. You know, it's like a combination of, you know, you're mad and also kind of wondering, you know, wondering if she remembers you or not. And I thought that was a pretty cool scene, too.
Yeah.
It's got to be interesting for you and Grace to pull off because now you're supposed to be, you're the same character, but she's playing somebody different, but it's the same one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and Grace does such a great job of it. I mean, she's just amazing how she can be the same character, but slightly different, and she really puts it on and does such a great job of changing it up just enough that you know that this isn't Caprica Boomer or this isn't Galactica Boomer. It's the one. It's very specific. Even if you didn't know, fans who watch the show all the time would be able to pick it out, I think.
Yeah. And then our question is, after killing the officer on the Pegasus, after saving Sharon from the rape, did you think your character was done? Well, you probably had the script ahead of time, right?
No, we don't get the scripts that far.
Oh, really?
I didn't think that I would be that if something happened to the chief that it would happen right away because they if you have a contract for like the season they have to pay you for all episodes produced. So if they kill you in episode 11, they still have to pay you for the rest of the season. So they have to pay you for 9 to do nothing. So I thought if I was going to die, I'd die. And you figure that if you're going to die, you're either going to die in the first 3, and they're just not going to pick you up, or you're going to die in the last 3. So, so as the season wears on, the actors start getting a little nervous, and they're checking the backs of the scripts to make sure that their character walks away.
Yeah. Well, Leah, when I had her on, she goes, you know, she gets the script, she looks and see, you know, reads through real quick and see if her character dies or not, and then she's happy that the character isn't dead. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I grabbed mine, and I start at the back, and I flip backwards until I find my name, and then it says, and Tyrell walks away. Yes, all right. Okay, you can't walk away if you're dead. All right, I live for one more. All right.
Yeah, and then actually, your character, Tyrell and the Hilo is the one that triggered this whole thing with the Pegasus, too, because you killed the...
No, we're bad men.
What?
We're bad men.
Yeah, started this whole thing. Now, that's pretty cool. These episodes of Pegasus have been, you know, incredible, you know?
They're really well done.
Yeah, especially with Michelle Forbes and the stories all kind of wound together. It was amazing.
Yeah, Michelle Forbes is so great, too, and she's such a wonderful lady. She was so much fun to be around. Very cool.
Yeah, and it's like your little incident with killing that guy would lead to this almost civil war amongst the two ships. I mean, you know, that was the plot point in the whole episode right there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just show Adama doesn't, you know, no man left behind and all that.
Yeah. And then, looking ahead to season 3, I already said, is it still fun or becoming a drag? We already answered that. But, hopefully, now season 3, now have they given you an idea where they're going at all yet or no?
Not a clue.
No.
Not a clue. I asked them specifically a week ago, and they said that they have the first 6 episodes written. Mm. Whether they're locked or not, I have no idea. Mm. But they said that they're written, and I say, so what happens to the chief? And they just said some very interesting things.
Oh,
thanks very much.
Yeah, well.
They're all cryptic.
Yeah, and then have the conventions. This convention question. Have the conventions becoming more crowded with the series being on longer?
You know what? I haven't done a convention in the States. I did Comic-Con right after the miniseries aired, and nobody had a clue who we were. But I've done several conventions in England, and I did one. I did one in London, actually, just a couple weeks ago, and Germany just before that.
Wow.
And, yeah, there's certainly more people that are aware of the show and watching the show, for sure.
Huh. Are you surprised that the fans of it are so, up about the series?
It always amazes me the time and effort and energy that people put into watching and cheering and enjoying these shows, and I feel so blessed to be a part of it and have all these great fans. It's, the people that I've spent time with over in Europe, the fans, it's just, they're the neatest people you'll ever meet. They're just so very cool and come from all walks of life. I mean, there's doctors and lawyers and politicians, and it's just, it amazes me.
Yeah.
And I have so much fun going to these things. I absolutely love it. And it's just sit around and have a beer and talk about the show, and you know, you're like a demigod for a weekend. You could do no wrong. It's great.
Well, it's a great series. I mean, I keep telling them when I have had Kitty on the others, to me, it reminds me of Dallas when it was on its heyday down here in the United States. I mean, just you know, we need an escape. I mean, and now I think it's, you know, providing an escape from us. We have so much crap going on in the real life, you know. But again, Galactica kind of plays to the current political scene here in the United States with the torture business, and we had the abortion business with the baby. You know, it's amazing how they give us an escape, but also they're kind of relating to our real life situation.
Well, I know that they do that on purpose. They do that specifically. They kind of look at what the story of the day is and the themes of the day, and what the, you know, what the world is struggling with, and sort of the philosophical questions of life, and they put a story around that, and then that creates a lot. I mean, look at how much furor there was over that rape, and it wasn't even a rape. It was a suggestion. He hadn't even, I mean, we shot it when we walked in, it had been going on for, you know, several minutes, but what actually aired was nothing had happened yet.
Yeah,
it was just the insinuation that it was about to happen, and people freaked out.
Yeah.
There was people all over the place that just freaked right out, and you know, I understand how it's horribly disturbing. Imagine us standing on the set watching this happen to Grace.
Yeah,
take after take after take after take. It was insane, but you know, that's what they do. They take these things that are actually taking place in the world, and you know, you can't bury your head in the sand. You got to realize that these things are taking place and create discussion, and great.
Yeah. Now, what's been the big difference, question for Chairman, what's the big difference been between season one and season two from an actor's standpoint?
Well, for me personally, I got more things to do, more interesting things to do, and it was 20 episodes, so we sort of settled in. You sort of settled into your character a little bit more, and now, for me, I just, you know, I sort of really just settled into the chief, and I can kind of just show up and do it, because it's sort of all become more second nature now.
Mm.
And really, once the great reviews came out and the ratings were doing well, and it got such a great word of mouth, the studio's just gone out of its way to make everybody feel fantastic and really valued and really an important part of things. And so that, for me, is great. You know, people like Mark Stern, who's, you know, king of the world down there, and his office has just been wonderful. You know, sending, you know, it means so much. They have no idea how much it means to an actor when one of the bigwigs just pops an email and says, hey, you know, just watched your episode with my wife or whatever, and I thought it was great. You know, thanks for your great work. It just, I mean, that blows you away. So I get feedback like that from, you know, the super big wigs, and it's tremendous. So yeah, that and I think the writing was great in season one, but season two they pushed it even a little bit further. So it was more interesting, fun stuff to do.
That's cool. Well, last question is, since I bumped into Barbara Walters here at Caesars yesterday, what kind of tree would you be?
A Douglas fir.
I thought you'd come up with something. It's good. I thought you'd say a weeping willow or something.
No. I'm a Douglas fir.
There
like,
you
that's
go.
That's so obvious. I'm 300 feet tall. I'm 400 years old. And I live in the rainforest of the Pacific Northwest. I'm a Douglas fir tree.
Absolutely. There you go.
And so is my brother.
All right. Absolutely. Well, Aaron, we thank you for being on the program.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you again.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, take care.
Bye. And that was Aaron Douglas, Tyrell from Battlestar Galactica. Oh, man, I thought I'd set him up with some kind of a softball question. What kind of tree would you be? That's a famous Barbara Walters question. You watch any of her specials, what kind of tree would you be? You know, but, I don't know. Well, I'll never give a career on ABC now, I guess.